From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I'm a Haitian, Haitian. When I landed in America, America, I got myself a green card, green card. Mama say, if I ever break the law, they gon' send me back home. This is my Haitian.
From Haiti to New Jersey to big-time fame around the world, Wyclef Jean's story could not be made up. Born poor, just outside Port-au-Prince. Came to the States when he was 9. Rap battled on the playground, formed the Fugees, went big, went solo, but never forgot his roots. Now he's a big activist with a big voice, talking for Haiti. Even put his hand up for the Haitian presidency. This hour on Point Haiti, America, and Wyclef Jean. You can join the conversation. How do you know Wyclef Jean from his music, his hip-hop, the earthquake in Haiti, controversy there? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Philadelphia is Wyclef Jean, Grammy Award-winning rapper, singer, producer. He gained fame with the New Jersey rap trio The Fugees, Lauryn Hill, Wyclef, and his cousin Praz in the 90s. Went on solo, then he went to politics and activism, started YELE, Haiti charity foundation that brought relief and controversy in the Haitian earthquake, made a bid for Haiti's presidency in 2010. Now he's looking back at his life and how he made it in his new memoir, co-written with big music writer Anthony Boza, called Purpose, An Immigrant's Story. Wyclef Jean, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
How are you, brother?
Very good. And so much to talk with you about. Your buddy is president of Haiti now. You're not. With all the problems down there, are you glad that it's Michel Martelly and Michel Martelly and not yourself?
Well, I think the first thing is whenever you decide that you're going to put yourself in a you're going to subject yourself to public service. The first thing is if you look in the dictionary or you Google it, you know, president of Haiti is perhaps the worst job in the world, you know. So it's not like you're taking the job based on you not knowing that it's going to be hard. You take the job knowing that it's going to be a sacrifice of a 40-year beyond that of just raw oppression and political instability, you know.
Mm-hmm. This was August of 2010 when you put your hand up, and for a good chunk of that month you were in play. There was a lot of excitement among many young people, in particular in Haiti. You're very, very well known there. You were ultimately not allowed to run because of residency requirements and the way they were interpreted in Haiti. What was your vision? How serious were you about it? If you had been elected president of Haiti, what was your vision?
You know, the first thing is my second book is going to be called They Try to J. Edgar Hoover Me, you know. And that book goes more into the political spoof of my run. Basically, just to clear that up, so you know, 5 years prior to me running, I was already an ambassador at large with a diplomatic passport. So legally, you cannot, for Haiti, you cannot be a diplomat for the country without being a resident in the country. I just wanted to clear that up in Haitian law. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to run. I couldn't present my policies or anything. I ran because of the urgency. After 24 hours going into the ground and seeing over 250,000 people under the rubble.
In the earthquake earlier that year.
Yeah. I knew what would be next. You would be corporate interests, you know, where companies would be coming in like, okay, we can build the houses, we can do all of this. But the fear that I had was the 52%, which is the youth population, they actually wouldn't be part of rebuilding their country, meaning like all of the technology would come in, build the country, and basically you would leave us. And you leave the youth with no training, no nothing. I ran on the fact that 80% of the population is living on less than $2 a day. Our greatest asset is human capital and our soil. So how do we go back and focus and make people proud to work in the soil again? Beyond just saying we want our agriculture back, set up a system where we actually get agribanks, where we actually bringing in the machinery to work on getting our soil back. These are some of the the ideas that I had, and with the right technicians in place that I didn't, unfortunately, get a chance to even present because I got bamboozled.
Bamboozled by the Haitian committee that decided that you, they decided yes, you the, didn't the, meet the residency. They didn't say they just didn't put your name on the list of active candidates.
Yeah, the CAP that was created by the president at the time that he was controlling, basically at the time, which came up with a bogus law. Because that law do not exist, don't exist.
What kind of reception did you get? Did people say, hey, you know, wait a minute, Wycliffe, we love your music, but maybe not as president? Or did they say, sure, we've got problems, you're a big star, go for it?
Well, the thing is, the new era that we're living in, when you can have a group of people that do a movement and start to topple government, with just through social media, what you have to understand, the rise of the new politicians is the people's politics. They don't believe in politics. So they 9 times out of 10 are going to go for the non-politician. So this is what scared a lot of people. The idea of running based on institution, curriculum, education, that's one factor of it. But the other factor is if you're going to lead people, you have to really know your people, and your people have to feel you or you can't lead. That's why even before I even started, they started labeling me a populist because they just felt the energy of the people.
I'm reading here. This is a story from yesterday from the Associated Press about people pouring into the streets in Port-au-Prince, Haiti's capital, to protest President Martelly's government, you know, saying things still aren't rebuilt properly. He promised free schooling. He promised houses. People saying he's fallen short. I mean, how is it going there this all this time after the earthquake now? And should it be better? Could it be better?
I mean, the thing is, first of all, in defense to President Martelly, him coming in office at the time, there was a lot of things that he wanted to get done. Going in front of Parliament, because with anything, Parliament has to approve it. I think he got a lot of resistance from Parliament. You know, he really was fighting for a bipartisan front. That didn't happen. And I think that's sort of like what set him back a little. But in defense to him, I feel with the means that he has in his hands, he's still keeping the country is still and in a form is still there's still stability. And in the sense of when people are saying they're not getting free education, it's more the amount of people that would want to see the free education is not getting it at the time. The frustration of the turtle movement of the, you know, let's rebuild the country. You know, the people are frustrated because they feel that that can move faster. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, job creation, just creating more jobs, you know. And of course, I see what's going on in Haiti, but it's the same way I see what's going on in our country, too, you know, in the States. So there's a lot of frustration going on around the entire world at the time.
Did the world fail Haiti after the earthquake? And we will look at that whole issue. But did the world fail, or did Haitians fail themselves? There's so many people still in big trouble there. How do you look at the aftermath?
Well, I mean, in the course of history, Haiti has had a great relationship with the West at one time. If it was not for Haiti,
when was that?
We in the West would not have the Louisiana Purchase. Just so that you're aware that Haitians even help America fight in Chicago. I have to be clear.
Fight who in Chicago?
Haitians helped Americans when they was fighting in Chicago.
What kind of fighting? You lost me there for a second.
Okay, that's no problem. There's a book, actually, you know, I don't mean to keep promoting my books, but there's a book coming out which is called Haiti Versus the West. And in this book, what I do is I detail in historical times, starting with 1803, with the Haitian Revolution, all the way leading up to today, which parts that Haiti played in with America, and in several wars, and what was the position, what was the policies, what caused Haiti to get to the embargo state.
When were Haitians fighting in Chicago, Wycliffe?
I'll get you the year.
I mean, what was it about? You're talking about when the French were still in North America
there? Yes,
yes.
We're talking about in the times of, we're talking about in the time of Napoleon. Wow. And at the time, keep in mind, also fighting in Chicago. And I'll get you the accurate year also on that.
That's okay. I get the context now.
Yeah, and also with the Louisiana Purchase. If it was not, you know, Haiti played a strategic part in the Louisiana Purchase.
Are you number one an American now? Number one a Haitian now? Just a complete combination? How do you consider yourself?
I consider myself human first. I believe that the only thing that separates us is man, and that's border. I was born in Haitian soil. At the age of 9, I came to the United States of America. I got a chance to experience what's called the American dream. And, you know, this is the best country in the world. I've traveled the entire, you know, half of the entire planet. But the idea is to take that dream back to where you come from and try to help more people get inspired.
You know, people are responding to your autobiography. Some are responding to the politics, some the relief effort and the controversy there. Some, too, you're very candid talk about your relationship with Lauryn Hill back in the Fuji days. Are you surprised where people's focus goes in the great big story you tell here?
Well, the story was actually told by me, you know, and what I would like people to do is to review the book, opposed to when you're writing a memoir, right? You're going back to certain age. So I'm like, at 21, I did this. At 24, I did this. So I more feel like writers are going into, you know, the characteristics of the individual at the time, you know. I just think that you have to read the book. I think the book is blunt. I think it's honest, and it gets to the point, and that's the idea of writing a memoir.
Wyclef Jean, please stand by in Philadelphia. The new book is Purpose, An Immigrant's Story. Wyclef Jean joins us today. You can join us as well, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Souken zorey tande, souken bouche pale, si e pa sa, peyi an li va koule, kan kou yon bato ki plen refije, sinon pa chanche bon Dieu, encore.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Haitian-American singer, rapper, activist Wyclef Jean about his life in Haiti, his life in the U.S., making a difference in a tough spotlight. He's out with a new memoir. It's called Purpose, An Immigrant's Story. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Behind us right here from his 1997 debut solo album after the Fugees, The Carnival, this is Yele, also the name of his relief organization, Charity Foundation. Some controversy around that during the earthquake time. We'll ask about that as well. You can join us. How did you come to know Wyclef Jean? Was it with the Fugees, with Lauryn Hill and Praz? Was it with the earthquake in Haiti, his group's work there? Was it with his push to be president of Haiti? What's your question for Wyclef Jean on rap, on politics, on Haiti? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Wyclef Jean joins us from Philadelphia. And Wyclef, we've got people lining up to talk with you. Virginia Beach, Virginia, Andra is on the line. Hi, Andra. You're on the air with Wyclef Jean.
Hello. Hello, Tom. Hello, Wyclef. It's very nice. It's an honor to get a chance to talk to you.
How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you. I wanted to let you know the Fuji CD is my go-to CD when I'm driving. Love it. Love it.
All right.
Great. Fantastic. I love every track on it. That's how I got to know you, and I wanted to make two short comments. I was very proud of you when you went back to your homeland and wanted to help and make things happen. That's what we should all do. Mm-hmm. I was really proud of you. I thought that was fantastic. And I wanted to know, how did it make you feel when there was all that controversy surrounding the positive that you were trying to do, and how things just seem to not go the way that I could see you wanting them to go, to help your country, and just surrounded by the negativity. Did that take away from your mindset of wanting to help, because it seemed like everyone was trying to keep you from doing what you wanted to do? And I'll take my answer off the air, and thank you again.
Andra, thanks very much for your call.
Well, I'm a student of history, so reading Martin Luther King and stories of Gandhi, Marcus Garvey, it's sort of like I just feel that at times what will happen is there's a phrase that says there's no good deed that goes unpunished. I think the idea is if you have a goodwill and good intentions, you have to keep going. So the idea is I definitely will keep going because 80% of my people living on less than $2 a day, over 52% is a youth population. So as I'm breathing and I'm healthy, it's important that not only I bring awareness, that I can actually help make a difference. So I will continue my work.
While Andra raises it, I mean, let's just go to it. There's a lot to talk about here, but there was a lot of relief brought by your Yele in Haiti at that time. It also came in for a lot of criticism, New York Times and others saying, you know, spent vast amounts on salaries, publicity, travel, bought services from your own companies, paid you for performing at a charity benefit. The head of Charity Navigator said, avoid this organization. What happened? Were there mistakes made? Was it fairly sort of called on the carpet for money not flowing exactly the right way? How do you look back on it now?
Well, the way that I look back on it is Yale is probably one of the organizations that got less money than other organizations, starting with the Red Cross that got over $250 million. I could keep going down on down. Mm. With these organizations, you don't have a face. You only see a cross or you see. With Yale, it was pinned down that The organization started long before the earthquake. 2005, with the World Food Program, Yele went down to Haiti at the time when the slums in Cité Soleil, no NGO could get into Cité Soleil at the time. It was rough. I told them, you know what, I'll get the food in there for y'all. They was like, well, we can't give you the food from the World Food Program. So basically, I went to the Dominican Republic out of my own pocket. We spent over $500,000, bought food to the Dominican Republic, filmed it to show them that it was safe. We could get the food in, started a partnership with the World Food Program. Continuing that, gave over millions of dollars of scholarships for kids. So by the time it got to the earthquake and the focus was basically on me because, I mean, since I got into the music business as a Fugee, the first time you probably saw a Haitian flag on national TV was me at the Grammys. So anything with Haiti, it's referring to me first. So the idea of me personally taking funds to put my pocket in benefits, that I denounce that over and over again. And I will constantly denounce that whenever I'm asked, because when someone is giving money, they should know where the money is going to. The idea of such an organization, there's what's called governance. So
are you still on the board with Yele, or are you out of that now?
First of all, once I was running for president, you can't be running for president and be on a board. So that I had resigned for the board running for president. But at the same time, I'm very influential in my country, not just Yele, but with different organizations, period. So just wanted you to know the governance aspect had got straightened out with the accountant. It was more of a tax issue. And then a new CEO came in, and I'm very proud of what the organization has done.
Here's Earthquake. This is from the 2010 album by Wyclef Jean, If I Were President.
Earthquake, down there in Haiti. Earthquake, in the past of Chile. Earthquake, in the end in Indonesia. Earthquake, and even shook China. Earthquake, it's coming to America. Earthquake. Out there in California, earthquake. Warn your people in the city that the earth is getting angry. I asked the earth, what have we done? She said, we building too much bombs. So there's too many sons that won't see their fathers. Too many daughters that won't see their mothers. Too many grandmas that won't see their grandkids. They're in the rubble in part of France.
Wyclef Jean, Earthquake, from the 2010 album, If I Were President. Of course, that's the year of the earthquake. You were down there very quickly. What did you see in those first hours, days after the quake?
In my book, I describe the first chapter is called The Invisible Man.
Mm-hmm.
So to be my country's son, and to be in a place where I can't walk down the streets without thousands gathering and grabbing me and trying to take everything, including my fingernails, to becoming invisible. So I landed on the ground. Wyclef was invisible, surrounded by bodies on the floor, children, seeing hotels turn into morgues, seeing morgues not having room for people, seeing undertakers in cemeteries hustling holes on how many people they're going to put under the dirt, to having a friend of mine who his daughter was killed in the earthquake the day before, shot dead in a cemetery, and he gets put in one of the holes. So this is some of the experience. It's even if I was to say it's apocalypse, I don't think that would even describe what it was.
And you feeling invisible there, because in the midst of that emergency, that tragedy, you were just one man walking through the nightmare.
One man walking through the nightmare, feeling helpless at the time, because no matter what you're doing, it doesn't feel like it's enough. I mean, even if you're saving one person, you see 1,000 people dying in front of you. Limbs, people without hands, one leg.
You had already written a song called If I Was President. I mean, more president, you know, with that lyric, If I Was President. This is back in 2004 on your solo album, Welcome to Haiti, Creole 101. I mean, where did that idea come from? Preacher's kid growing up in Newark, New Jersey. Where did the whole president idea come from?
The president idea came from my uncle, his name is Ray Raymond Joseph. Raymond Joseph is also a great activist and a great writer. He's actually the first one that translated the English Bible, the New Testament, into Creole. He also, in the time of the earthquake, was the ambassador for Haiti, for America.
To the U.S.,
Yes, Raymond Joseph. And he's also was one of those that was part of the spearhead of the coup at the time of getting rid of Baby Doc. So politics has always been an undertone in the house as the household, as a preacher, you know, religion, of course, being an undertone. But the idea and the ideal of just different debates around the house of politics was constantly going on.
It was this was President from the 2004 album, Welcome to Haiti, Wyclef Jean.
If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. Instead of spending billions on the war, I can use that money so I can feed the poor. 'Cause I know some so poor. When it rains, that's when they shower, scream and fight the power. That's when the vulture devours. If I was president.
Wyclef Jean was president. Joins us from Philadelphia. His new memoir is Purpose. Wyclef, this has got that reggae sound again. So did the last track. How does that figure into your musical background? Haiti. I mean, we associate reggae with Jamaica. Is there lively reggae in Haiti as well, or have you adopted it?
The entire Caribbean. The idea of music at one time, Haiti and Cuba used to share all the culture. So there's parts of Haiti when you hear bands playing, you would think that you're in Cuba. Geographically, Jamaica is right next to Haiti. And the idea is, within the Haitian Revolution, you had some of our fathers. One of them, his name was Boukman. And Boukman actually was from Jamaica and went to Haiti at a very young age and joined Toussaint the Louverture, who's part of the movement, and also Jean-Jacques Dessalines. So naturally, the music comes from Africa. From Africa, we were shipped over on ships to the Caribbean. So naturally, there's nothing divided about us. When you hear me singing reggae, I do it like that because it just feels natural. Or if I'm doing salsa or merengue, you know, a carnival, it all just feels natural because it's in my soul from the ancestors.
Let's go to Eric calling from Coventry, Rhode Island. Eric, thanks. You're on the air with Wyclef Jean.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Wyclef, big fan ever since the days of the Translator Crew.
thank you, sir.
I love the song Gunpowder from the Carnival. Uh-huh.
Yes.
And two questions, really. I don't know if that's a true story or not about your brother being killed in Port-au-Prince. And if it is or isn't, how was that influential to you as far as your political activism is concerned?
Yes. When I'm talking about the song Gunpowder, so in the time in the hood or in the ghetto, we refer to each other as brothers and as sisters. So there was a time when it was the time of the late years with Baby Doc, and definitely they gunned down, you know, a family friend in Port-au-Prince. And the idea of this song is to say, you know, I smell gunpowder, Haiti's gunpowder, Brooklyn's gunpowder. And when will the violence cease? You know, Christians pray for a new day. It's still the same way, you know, but they say good things come to those who wait. But how long must we wait? It was a song which was I was very frustrated when I was writing it. I was very angry at the time.
I love the story from your birth, as you tell it. This is October 1972. You become a man of words in many ways, in song and rap. So was your father in a different role as a Nazarene preacher, and maybe your grandfather as a voodoo priest before that. We'll look at it. But I love the story of your birth. You say you were a big baby and growing up in a tough village, kind of slum-like slumdog millionaire outside Port-au-Prince, as you describe it. Your mom was having trouble delivering you, and your father took a kind of preacher's step here, which was really remarkable. Remind us what he did.
I mean, basically, you know, as a minister, it's he still believed in some form of my what my grandfather was doing. You know what I mean? Because he basically boiled a psalm, and he boiled a psalm.
The 23rd psalm from the Bible. He tore
That's
the
right.
page out, boiled the psalm. It's a great psalm. Of course, the Lord is my shepherd; I shall not want.
He made my mama drink it because she was in pain. And I always tell my mom, man, you must have really loved that guy to be drinking all that paper.
he tore the page from the Bible, cut it into pieces, put it in the boiling water, gave her the concoction. She drank it.
Yeah, she drank it because she loved him and she believed in him. You know what I'm saying? But I would have never drunk it.
You write. You said, this will ease your pain, he told her. You write 2 hours later. I was born. My father gave me the gift of words before I even left my mother's womb. Is that a story that was told in your family with laughter, with amazement?
Well, definitely with, you know, like when my mama told me, she was like, come here, let me tell you how you was born, you know. And I was like, oh, interesting. But this is why he gave me the name Wyclef Jean. He named me after the Reformatator. From the 13th going into the 14th century, the Englishman.
Who translated the Bible from what, the Latin to English?
Exactly.
That's a revolutionary act at the time.
Yeah, that's where I got the name from. So,
wow. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. That page of the Bible in the psalm, to Wyclef Jean's mother 2 hours before he was born. We hope it brought her some relief. Wyclef Jean's new memoir where he tells that story and many more is Purpose. You can join the conversation this hour, 800-423-8255. How do you look at Wyclef Jean as a performer, a leader, a potential president? 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. They give it that type of for me. That's what I should do. That's what I does. That's what I create. Yo, rally, rally, rally. Yo, rally, rally. Lord, yo, rally, rally. Yo, rally, rally. Yo,
Gaz en rêve. Mr. Pierre mon Jérémy, mon style là. Gaz en rêve.
It was my last day on earth. Treat it like my first. Go out the way I came in. So innocent, so pure, with no thoughts of insecurity. Live life to the fullest. Be what I wanna be. Last day on earth.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Haitian American singer, rapper, activist, Grammy Award winner Wyclef Jean about his life in Haiti, his life in the U.S., making a difference in a sometimes tough spotlight. His new memoir is Purpose, an Immigrant's Story. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. He joins us today from Philadelphia, and it's great to have him with us. Heaven's in New York with us right here from the Carnival Volume 2, Memoirs of an Immigrant. It's a big, big theme in his work. He was back in Haiti, 2010, wanted to run for president, wasn't finally allowed, but he's still very much engaged. You can join the conversation this hour. How do you look at Wyclef Jean? Haitian Americans, how do you see this artist, this activist? How did you see his relief work in Haiti, the stories, his run, kind of a run for the presidency? Is he your voice? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Wyclef Jean, let's go to our callers. So many here. Providence, Rhode Island, Sean's calling. Sean, you're on with Wyclef.
Hey, hi, Tom. How you doing?
Well.
Thank you for your good job. You're doing a good job.
Bless you. You're with Wyclef Jean. What's your question, Sean?
How you doing, Wyclef?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm very good because I'm Haitian, too, and I appreciate very much what you've been doing to Haiti to help out a lot of people. And I just want to call you to encourage you to just keep doing what you're doing. Don't let nobody put you down. And I know you've been doing a lot of good things in Haiti, and which is that right now this is the time that we, as a Haitian, we need to come together and then try to do whatever we can do to help out in Haiti. And only thing that I would like to say for you to I'm praying for you to keep doing what you're doing, and don't let nobody put you down, and then, you know, keep your heads up.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Good wishes right there from Providence. Let's get one more from Nashville, Tennessee. Benjamin, you're on with Wyclef Jean.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Wyclef.
How are you?
Calling you from Nashville, Tennessee right now, but I grew up
all
in
right.
New York. Lower East Side, Washington Heights.
I know where that's at.
You know, I actually remember one time going to 125th Street where you had a signing for the Eclectic, and you performed for everyone, which was really cool, really cool. Mm-hmm. But my question is this, first off, congratulations with everything that you're doing, giving back mm-hmm. to your country. I think it's fantastic. You know, I'm of Latino descent. You know, I remember songs like Sang Fezi and Guantanamera, you know, which, you know, really I think did a lot for popular culture in the introduction of different thought processes and language into what is considered quote-unquote popular music. My question, Wyclef, is, you know, is there any of that in the future? You know, are we going to see any more, you know, top 40 hits from Wyclef where we've got that infusion again?
My last record, there was probably two. One was the one I wrote for Shakira, Hips Don't Lie, which is still the biggest pop song of all times. And that was, I think, a few years ago. So I just got back in the studio. I just started the new album. It's titled Refugee Republic. It'll definitely have a lot of sonics, a lot of new fusion of where I feel music is going currently and in the past. And, of course, my daughter's going to A&R it. She's like 7 years old, and she's the hardest critic, you know, so it's going to be cool.
We'll look for that. We'll look for that. Your daughter, Angelina, right? Do I remember correctly?
Angelina, yeah.
That's great. Let's look back for a second. This was from The Score, the huge album, 15 million or something sold, the Fugees. And here... Wyclef Jean and Lauryn Hill trade lines in the song Zealots.
I feel like Rockwell, somebody's watching me. I got no privacy, whether on land or at sea. And for your biting zealots, your rap's a cacophonic. Hypocrite, critic, but deep inside you wish you had the pop hit. It hurts, don't it? A refugee come to your turf and take over the earth.
Yeah. See, my rhymes are the type of fly rhymes that can only get down with my crew.
Wyclef Jean and the amazing voice of Lauryn Hill there in Zealots from The Score, 1996. Wyclef, one of the bombshells in the book is you report in here that this was the same time you were in the Fugees, you were falling in love with the woman who would be your wife, Claudinette, who is your wife, and you were also very much in love with Lauryn Hill at that time. Thought you were having a child with her for a while, and until it turns out it was the son of Bob Marley, Rohan Marley's child, I guess. This is big news. People are making a lot out of this. You decided to share something very, very intimate here. Why?
Well, the first thing is there's 8 chapters in the book. You know, if somebody goes straight to the Fuji chapter and take one line and make that the headline of the entire book, you know, it was important for me in the sense of the only thing that's a secret is if you and your maker knows it. So the idea is in the next 20 to 25 years, 30 years, I guarantee you there'll be like 50 to 60 different books on what happened with the Fugees, the different stories. And this story that I detail in the book is because I am not the only one who knows this story. There's 200 to 300 people that knows this story. So if they came out with it first, then we would be doing this interview. What you would be doing is saying, Clef, there was something that came out based on set on you. So it's always important in the case of a memoir, even though at times things hurt, because I go past the one line and I basically, describe the story and keep it moving. But if you're doing a memoir, you have to... the memoir, and this is getting a lot of reviews. And what's funny is the reviews are not based on how great the book is. The reviews are just, judging me on what I wrote. I'm the one that wrote it. You know what I mean?
Well, speak to it as an artist then, as a full man, because you're showing yourself in full here. And you're saying, look, yes, I was in love with Claudinette. She made me what I am. And you also, if I read you right, you're kind of saying, and I was in love with Lauryn Hill because she was maybe such an impetus to you as an artist.
At the time, yeah. At the time, definitely. And once again, the memoir goes back to that time and stuff. So it was important. Tom, if I may, right?
Mm-hmm.
Earlier when we first started, you was asking me something about Chicago, remember?
Yes, you said Haitians were in the middle of a fight in Chicago.
Yeah, so because me and my brother, we constantly go back and forth in history. So it was important just to let you know that Jean-Baptiste Point du Sable, right?
Okay.
He's an immigrant. He had left Haiti, and he actually came and he founded what later became Chicago. So the state of Illinois in Chicago declares him the founder of Chicago, October 1968.
Not 1968, surely, right? Was it 1768? I don't
know. Yeah, 1768. Okay. Yeah. But I'm hitting you with, you'll get the year.
Yeah.
But keep listening real quick, because we was talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
I just want to you to look up, and then you see the year. He just sent this to text. I told him send this so I could read it to Tom.
Good.
And then the other one we was talking about, Henry Christophe participated in the American Revolution War and the French. That was the war I was talking about. Now, what's interesting about this guy, like Henry Christophe was like a drummer boy, right? Mm-hmm. And then he ended up being like, I think like Haiti's first king. So,
wow.
You know,
it's all woven together.
Yeah. So it's like I told my brother, who's a lawyer, Sam, I said, man, I'm on with Tom, man. You know, I can't send me this info so I can shoot at Tom. So this is, just research that, because it's some cool, I always constantly look up and I'm just learning different things about Haiti's history. And I'm always going like, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know this.
And it gets right into Wyclef Jean's music. Here, you can hear some of it right here. What we're just talking about from Election Time. This is 2010, his album, If I Were President.
Gramps was a voodoo priest, dad was a preacher, uncle was a mason, I was raised Christian, best friend Muslim, al-salam alaikum, my manager was Jewish, he taught me Shabbat Shalom, Flatbush Rastas, taught me the scriptures, Haile Selassie, Marcus Garvey, St. Lovitcher, Haitian Revolution, Napoleon's army got spanked by them Haitians, Tucson, St. John with the info, did you know that a Haitian founded Chicago? If I was president, the first thing I would do is get my people out them tents.
Election time is coming.
My generation like
we are here. As long as we got music, we gon' dance all day. We gon' vote Taylor Swift, she gon' vote Kanye. Yeah. Election time is coming.
But the kids go
Wyclef Jean, election time from If I Were President. Joseph is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Joseph, you're on with Wyclef Jean.
Hi, Wyclef. Hi.
How are you?
How you doing, my brother?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, God. So I would like to see you do another concert. And the last concert I've been to, that was like in Bedley College in Walter.
Uh-huh.
I'd like you do another one. Now he's not Bedley College anymore. He's Bedley University.
Yes,
so,
sir.
I love you. I love you a lot, Wyclef. So
thank
maybe
you,
you might different opinion politic with me. So I will support you for your candidacy when you was candidate in Haiti. Even now, I know in the beginning, I think you was in the same place. I don't know. Politics is always like that. And if you run again, I will support you because I love you. You represent Haiti. And I think you do a lot of good things for Haiti. You do a lot of good things for that country. Now I'm a Haitian American. So I will. You're always going to have my support everywhere you are. And God bless you. And continue to do the good work for Haiti.
Joseph,
thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Joseph. Will you run again? Try to run again for president of Haiti, Wyclef?
They say never say never. But I clearly, the next 7 years that are coming up, I'm basically focused on building a multimedia, a music/movie company. And the focus of this is I'll be going around the entire country with the Wyclef Jean talent shows, recruiting talent. And what I would like to do when it comes to my country is to be able to be in a position where I raise enough money myself, where in the future I can put up the university myself and put up the hospital, you know, myself. This would be a dream for me.
We've got a track here. This is from 2004 of you singing along with the musician then known as Sweet Mickey, now known as President Martelly of Haiti. It's called Bicentennial.
Every time they throw us down, we stand up and hold our ground.
Merengue, merengue, salsa, samba.
What if I told you a king from Cuba?
Feel my culture. This is the blood of a warrior from Haiti.
This is the Bicentennial.
Soldiers, come on, come on.
La, 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 la.
Wyclef Jean singing there in 2004 with then Sweet Mickey, now President Michel Martelly of Haiti. It's amazing. Wyclef, Johnny is listening, and she writes to us on Twitter. She says she's fascinated by your Haitian history stories. She'd like to hear more of your sort of alternative history of Haiti. I mean, when you tell the big story of Haiti to yourself, to your daughter, how do you tell it? What's the arc? Because so many people look at Haiti and they think disaster, trouble, problem upon problem. How do you tell the story of Haiti to your young daughter, let's say?
The way I start the story to my daughter, I said, look, there's a place that's called, I said, this place is called the Pearl of the Caribbean. And I clearly started like this. I don't say it was called, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's called the Pearl of the Caribbean. And she says, what's the place? And I said, guess. And she can't guess. I said, Haiti. She's like, wow, the Pearl? I said, yeah. And, you know, I said, and one time Haiti and Cuba used to share culture, music, dancing. I said, everything. And I said, do you know where a great portion of the world used to get their coffee and sugar at one time from? She was like, Haiti. I was like, yeah, Haiti, Haiti. You know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I go into it and I says, look, I said, do you know who was the first country to, like, recognize, you know, support Israel, like, within the United Nations and, you know, and she's like, who, you know what I'm saying? And I said, Haiti, 1948, you know? So it's like I do it in a very playful way. Mm-hmm. By the end of the day, she just feels like Haiti is the coolest place. I took her to the roughest slum in Haiti. A place called Cité Soleil.
Yes.
And she was barely three. And she was giving, it was still a rough time, and she was handing gifts to the kids. She was giving backpacks. And then we left. And when we came back to America, I had a show I think it was a year later, 2 years later. I was performing at Nickelodeon, and she was excited because I would be performing with Dora. And
the Explorer.
At that age, you know, Dora to her was cooler than Justin Bieber. You know what I'm saying? At the age. And so I'm like, Angelina, do you want to play drums with me in the show? And she's like, okay, I'm going to play drums with you. So we get to, you know, Nickelodeon, big hall, big production. And I look on the side and she's not on the stage and she's arguing with her cousin, which is my niece. Mm. And she's telling my niece, listen, I can get, you know, my dad to have you play drums too, because he has to pay me for this show. And I could get you paid too. So we both could just get paid. You know, I just talked to my dad. And then I come over and I'm like, Angelina, what you doing? Like, I'm your dad. You extorting me? Are you using me? Like, and then she says, no, I need that money because I have to go back to Haiti and bring more backpacks to Cité Soleil. So to actually think she forgot and to see that she remembered, you know, it really touched me. It's all on what you instill in the child and sort of like, so I guess my history and knowing is exciting to me because of what my parents and my uncles instilled in me.
That hope and all the images and troubles that we know of, there's a contest there. We hear where you put your energy in that contest, Wyclef Jean. We're grateful for your time today. The new memoir is Purpose, an Immigrant Story. Wyclef, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great to have you here. We'll go out with Historia off the 2011 single. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.